Is John, I'm an alcoholic.
John.
Proud member of the Westside Men's Group.
Nice.
And so, yeah, I got the short stick, I guess you could say, with humility. But here's the deal. Stevie prayed over me this morning. Arthur Rice gave me a humility prayer. And Matt gave me a big hug, so I should be good to go. Because it's certainly not about me. So I, like Armin, have a couple of books. Thanks for last night, brother. It was awesome. And I'm so looking forward to Dave and Bobby and Stevie tomorrow morning. And it's a privilege to be up here, just to be alive, frankly. To be sober is beyond my wildest dreams. The rest is a miracle. This article that I got, just to put it into context, is so apropos. It's called Humility for Today. And years ago, we had a small group of guys, Tom and Dave and myself and Daryl and Chandler and Roy, like a lot of guys, a good group of guys that you guys probably know. And we went through Language of the Heart, and we went through a lot of, not the whole book, but a lot of the articles. And that's where this kind of comes from, is those articles. So I was always familiar with this article, and I read it a lot of years ago, and the title, Humility for Today, kind of freed me. Because what I thought when I got here was that we gain these attributes versus our defects, and that's it. We keep them. Like, okay, I have patience now, and I have tolerance now, and I have humility now, and I have, like, it was, for me, it was like a checklist in my first couple of years sober. I just thought that's the way this worked because I had no clue how it worked. And I came to realize shortly thereafter that my defects overshadowed any kind of attributes on a daily basis, usually even today, right? So humility to today, so for today. I put this into context because Bill wrote this article when he was 67 years old and 27 years sober. And most of the articles you're going to hear were all written right around this period, within like a six-month period, with the exception of Bobby's that was written in 1958. So Bill had like 23 years sober. But for guys who are in here, like I'll be 62. I don't have 27 years sober. I came in 26 years ago. So to put it into context, Bill was writing these articles and talking about, like, humbling himself and talking about these things in such a way that you would think at, again, when I was newer, at 27 years, he would be just filled with ego and, you know, it was Bill W. But yet he writes things like, there can be no absolute humility for humans, which is perfect. At best, we can only glimpse the meaning and splendor of such a perfect ideal. And that gets me off the hook, because I've come to terms with the fact that humility, everyone says, oh, it's so hard to give a talk on humility. Well, it's not about me. I have humility for today, or glimpses of humility in any given day, just like I have fear, just like I have honesty, just like I have lust, just like it's all there. There's these giant lists that we all know of, assets and liabilities. All of them are for the taking for me every single day. It's where I go with the day, right? So sometimes I have humility for the day. Sometimes I have selfishness. So this article, when I read it years ago, kind of got me off the hook when I realized that humility is something I'm never going to attain. No human's going to attain, because I believe this stuff. Now, this is Bill's opinion, obviously, but it's based on 27 years of sobriety and a co-founder of the program, so I buy into it, like many of us do. I'm going to read a little bit, share some of my experience, same like Armin did. I have a couple of books. I don't know where it's going to go, but we'll see. He writes here, excessive guilt or rebellion leads to spiritual poverty. But it was a very long time before we knew we could even be more broke than on spiritual pride. A topic I know a little bit about. In my first 10 years sober, by the time I had 6 or 7 years sober, and these two guys will attest because I sponsored them both in early sobriety, it was either this way or the highway. And that was my message. And this way was, if you're not doing the steps in the book, if you're not a big book thumper, if you're not going to a big book meeting and a step meeting once a week, you're doing it wrong. Now, I didn't necessarily say that from a lectern, and I didn't necessarily spew that off a mountaintop. But if you knew me, they're laughing, because that was the message. That was the sponsorship message. It was like that. It was drilled into me by Fusick and a lot of the other old-timers at the time, and it was like, this is the deal, and if you're not doing it this way, you're not doing it the right way. Now, I didn't even know that was spiritual pride. I didn't know it had anything to do with pride, because I didn't understand. You don't know what you don't know, you know? We learn these things, I guess, as we go, right? Here's another thing that occurs. Now that we're sober, people congratulate us on these signs of progress, while we naturally proceed to congratulate ourselves. Right? So when I came in here, I had $35. I was 36 years old. I literally had $35. And I thought, whew, at least I have a couple of bucks in my pocket. Right? And shortly thereafter, I, you know, met a great girl. I was having sober sex that was incredible. She was gorgeous. Couple of years in, I joined a country club and took up golf. I got a great job at 1 year sober. I started making six figures in 3 years for the first time in my life. And what did I do at 3 and 4 and 5 years? I went... I made it. Like, great story. We were talking about Milton Gould, and some of you who were at the old Senegal probably remember Milton. He was an old-timer he was a wonderful guy. He was a garment district guy. He was 5 foot nothing. He got sober at 65. He passed at 83. And he ran around AA, and at my very first meeting at Bonaventure Weston Big Book Workshop, when I saw him, I thought he had to at least be the vice president of AA. At least VP. Like, maybe even a C-level, but definitely a V-level guy. Because he just came off like that. He was a character. And he told some stories that, for me, he brought my humility down. Like, he taught humility by... example, right? He was a guy, in early sobriety, we had this gig. My friend Brad's father worked over at Doral Country Club. And I met Brad. He had about 2 years sober. I had about a year sober. And he said, my dad works at Doral if you guys would like to get together for golf. And I before that, I was like, we're a little tied up with golf. We already have 8 guys, so I don't know if we could fit you into our group. But since your dad works at Doral,
just had an opening.
Hence to say, we played Doral for 2 years. But into this whole thing, what happened? And I'm talking about lack of humility. I'm talking about newcomer. I'm talking about, it doesn't matter how much time you have. It's a total lack of humility on my part was this. I started making a little money, and we're playing Doral now. Now, we're playing Doral on the shy, you know, we're sneaking in at 5 a.m., we're going up the back stairs, cutting through the pool, showing up with our clubs, and his dad would send us out, and no one knew, and we'd give him $15 or $20, and we were now, or I was, member of Doral. And I would walk around with my Doral golf shirts at meetings. And Milton walked up to me one Sunday morning. We used to go to a 9:30 principals meeting, and he said this to me. He said, and he used to always do this. And he would walk you over, and he put your arm, and he's short, and he put your arm back and say, you know you're stealing from Doral. You know the first principle behind first step is honesty, and you are not practicing that. And I went, it's Doral. Like, you can't take this away from me. Like this is like, you can't do that to me. Like, this was the greatest gift of the program up to that point, a year or two sober, that I ever got. Forget about being sober. Like, this was the greatest gift for me. And I remember shortly thereafter, we all felt like it hit us. And we were like, you know what? And it took a while, right? The alarming thing about such pride blindness is the case with which it is justified. Self-justification is a universal destroyer of harmony and love. Bill's smart. You know, he's writing this stuff, like I said, in 27 years. When I inventory such defects, I like to draw a picture and tell myself a story. So this is part of the solution for me. Like, the game changer for me with these defects has become inventory, right? And I'll read this because I think this is just so vital. Page 98 in our 12 and 12, which, again, is a game changer. There is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit, but when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. So he talks about, in this article, inventory, step 10, with step 6 and 7. And if anyone's read that latest version of Drop the Rock, they put a book out that talks about how 6 and 7 and 10 are all intertwined. In 1962, they didn't publish Drop the Rock. So Bill had that already. He was talking about how step 10 helps us with 6 and 7. Of course, our first attempts at such inventories are apt to prove very unrealistic. I used to be a champ at unrealistic self-appraisal. I wanted to look only at the part of my life which seemed good. Then I would greatly exaggerate whatever virtues I suppose I had attained. Next, I would congratulate myself on a grand job I was doing. 27 years sober, dude, and he's laying it out. He's not laying it out in a retreat with 80 people or in a home group with 100 people. He's writing it in the grapevine to every AA that was alive in 1962 and sober. His humility, this isn't about my humility. This article is about a guy that I get goosebumps when I think about, how did this guy even achieve this? Now, we all know that Bill had an ego problem and Dr. Bob was the spiritual one. We know that. But at 27 years sober, he starts writing these passages in the grapevine, and I'm just like, my God. And he calls himself out. And that's what we do. We call ourselves out. Me and Alan were talking this weekend about, you know, genuine people, genuine sharing, you know? And when I look, I told him, I said, look around this room. The reason why this works so well, because everyone's genuine here. No one's BSing anybody. I mean, yeah, we all have our moments, right? We might embellish here or do this here. But for the most part, you know, being genuine, to me, is a really great sign of humility. Because we could finally, like, be comfortable in our own skin. You know, I'm finally comfortable in my own skin. And it's taken a lot of years, you know. Someone said, did you sleep well last night? I'm having a shoulder issue, and I had an MRI, and it's not, you know, terrible, but I'm a side sleeper. You know, I'm a tosser and a turner, and I like to sleep on my side. And last night, I did the graveyard kind of sleep. I didn't want to start turning because the last thing I wanted is to come up here this morning going, oh, my God, it's killing me, you know? And I woke up at like 3 o'clock to pee, and I was still like this, and I went, I have a clear conscience. Today, some nights, you know, I am completely turned around, and my feet are on the pillows. You know, so that day wasn't so, you know, so easy. Defects of character. Sometimes I would simply have to look at certain situations where on the face of them, I was doing very badly. Here he is again, just admitting where he's at this time in his sobriety. And he quotes, well, if these people would only treat me right, I wouldn't have to behave the way I do. Well, God well knows that I do have awful compulsions. I just can't get over this one. So he'll have to release me. I love the arrogance in that because I got to tell you, you know, early on when we were doing 6 and 7 in my early sobriety, I smoked cigarettes like there was no tomorrow. I loved cigarettes. I loved cigarettes like I loved booze and drugs, right? And I remember going there and my sponsor would say to me, one day, and I'm like, never. I'll never give those up. And I'll never give this up, and I'll never give that up. Well, you know, years later, I put the cigarettes down, you know, some years ago, you know. But at this point, God knows I have these awful compulsions. I can't get over them, so he'll just have to release me. This I positively will not do. I won't even try. And Bill says, of course, my conflicts went right on mounting because I was simply loaded with excuses and refusals. I mean, I read this article, I'm like, dude, it's my life story. You know, it's just my life story. But the beauty in this, again, and I always reiterate, it's humility for today. It's humility for this moment. It's glimpses of unselfishness. It's glimpses of trying to help another with nothing in return. It's those things. And we all get there. You know? There's another line in here, in this 12 and 12, you know, Arthur Love. In step 7, in the very beginning, indeed, the attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of each of AA's 12 steps. Every step is filled with humility. Nearly all AAs have found, too, that unless they develop much more of this precious quality than may be required just for sobriety, they still haven't much chance of becoming truly happy. And I learned that lesson the hard way. Unless I have true humility or glimpses of it or actually try to attain humility, there's very little chance of my recovery being anything but just not drinking. You guys know my story. You know, 11 years, I had a relapse. Listen, it took me 5.5 years to get back. And by the grace of God, I celebrated 8 years a couple of months ago. And that is... We were sharing in our small group last night. We were talking about fear. And I said, the fear I had when I came back was so devastating and so overwhelming that there's no other fear that I could ever compare it to. I didn't know if I could ever get sober again. I didn't know if I did permanent damage to my body and my brain. I didn't know. Ernie, you get a lot of shout outs this week, but I'll give you another one because he took me through a process in that first year back that saved my life. Now, I know it was God working through you, but you were the conduit, you know? And again, it took a certain humility on both our parts to be able to come together. Believe me, I met Ernie in my first or second meeting at Bonaventure when he had 25 years ago. And I was like, oh, boy. You know, I said that about a lot of people when I came in, though, because you're totally judgmental. Like this, someone said last night, Armin, about taking the inventory. Someone shared about inventory. How do I know if the, you know, well, you know, when you knew, you got to take inventory. There's so many assholes here, right? Including moi. So when I came back, my very first meeting at Westside, which I crawled back into and picked up what I hoped to be my final white chip. I walked out and I left and I knew I needed a sponsor because Don already said, you need to go find someone else. He let me right off the hook. He goes, you need someone that can help you, dude. I'm done. I took you through 10 years and I walked back and I saw Ernie and I knew, and I knew he was the toughest guy in the room. I knew he wouldn't let me off the hook. I knew I couldn't pull it over on him. I knew it. Because by that point, I think I'd pull it over on anybody. And I said, would you sponsor me? And I don't know if you remember this. She said, I've been waiting 20 years for you to ask me that. And we stayed together for a couple of years, and I'm here through the grace of God first, but him and all of you. During those bouts of guilt, there was never a decent regret for the harms I had done, nor is there any serious thought of making such restitutions as I could. The idea of asking God's forgiveness, let alone the forgiveness of others, never occurred to me. And that was kind of my downfall. You know, when I look at what happened, like, you know, listen, there's people in here that have relapsed, there's people in here that have one white chip, there's people who have a year sober, there's people who have 50 years sober. There's all kinds of people, right? I didn't want to be that guy, but I am that guy. And today I'm blessed to be that guy. But then I was embarrassed and shameful and guilt-ridden to be that guy. And I certainly wasn't asking God's forgiveness, never mind my own. I could not forgive myself. Why would God forgive me? I let this thing slip away. Right? It wasn't humility. It was total humiliation. Total humiliation. All done internally by me. Because all the men wanted, all my guys wanted... Dave went to Al-Anon, for God's sakes, when I had a relapse. I mean, you laugh about that?
But it's,
when I heard, I cried. I wept when I heard that one of my first sponsee had to go to Al-Anon over my actions. Love you, brother. Seriously. In pride, I say, look at me, I'm wonderful. In guilt, I moan, I'm awful. It's my story. You know, it's just my story. So I have 10 minutes. So what's the solution? There's always a problem. Bill always has a solution, which is the beauty of the program. This is why I see humility for today as that safe and secure stance midway between these violent emotional extremes. It is a quiet place where I can keep enough perspective and enough balance to take my next small step up the clearly marked road that points toward eternal values. I think we not regret these conflicts. They seem to be a necessary part of growing up, emotionally and spiritually. They are raw material out of which much of our progress has to be made. I sponsor guys throughout my sobriety, and I sponsor guys today, and I have one in particular sponsee who's celebrated 2 years, who I'm just dynamite guy I'm so proud of. And he's helped me way more than I've helped him. But he would come to my house and he'd say, dude, I can't believe I'm still doing this, you know? And I was like, dude, this isn't like winning the lottery isn't spiritual growth. Pain is spiritual growth. Winning the lottery is just having a lot of extra dough in the bank. It doesn't suck, but it is what it is. But pain is the touchstone, right, of all spiritual growth. Without pain, I have no shot at even any type of humility. I got Sermon on the Mount for my 1 year anniversary. I got This Is the Book. So in 1998, March 30th, I got this book from our friend Susie Sparks, God rest her soul. A couple of you guys were at my 1 year anniversary. I think Brad was there, and I think Don was there. Armin was there with his wife, Mary. And she gave me this book. And what did I do with this book? It went on the shelf because this was way over my head. And it remained on the shelf. I did pull it out. And if you look at the back with the Our Father, every line is underlined because that I could comprehend. But Beatitudes, religion, Jesus, right, Stevie? I was like, that's where I have to draw the line. I had to draw the line somewhere. So over the course of the last year or two, I found, we were doing some cleaning out, and I actually found the book on CD. And I was like, huh, this is great. Because I'm an idiot, right? I don't want to sit here and read. It was just, it's tough. Like, if you haven't read it, it's higher learning. I mean, it's pretty serious stuff. And I popped in the CDs. Alan Kay. Alan Kay. If before this retreat you would have said $10 for whoever's phone's gonna go off, would have said Alan Kay. That's great. Freaked them out. This freaked them out completely. So anyway, I started listening to the CDs. And I get to this section that says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school. So I always thought that meant that's completely BS because the religion's now I know that this wacky Catholic religion is completely wrong because the meek are weak, powerless. I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. I considered my dad meek. My dad was weak. He wasn't. He wasn't. He was a wonderful man. He was a spiritual giant. But growing up, I thought he was weak because he relied on his faith. And I was like, what a chump. It's just horrible. Thank God for 4 steps, right? Because he was right at the top. Because I couldn't live sober with that. That was a killer for me, you know, thinking that of a man who was really marvelous. And my dad's more in my life today than I think he ever was. He passed away a couple of years before I got sober. He passed away in 92. But anyway, the long and short of that is that meek to me was weak. It was inherit the earth. Guys like me, powerful guys, guys who are self-reliant, guys who make money, guys who are tough, they're going to inherit the earth. Because like you said in the Four Agreements, that's what I was kind of taught. Not by bad parents, but just in general as you're growing up. Like, you're going to make something of yourself, and you're going to do this, and don't tell any secrets out there. And those are the agreements I was raised with. I think a lot of us, I don't think a lot of us were raised with, hey, go do a fourth and fifth step with a stranger. You know, like that wasn't part of the agreement in my family anyway. It was like, whatever's said here stays here. That was one of the agreements that we hear here, but that's what it was. So I start listening to this in the car, and I'm completely blown away. Now, this is like a year ago. This isn't like, you know, 5 years sober or 3 years sober or 20 years, whatever it is, I'm blown away. And you guys probably know this, but he talks about this beatitude, this lesson, is among the half dozen most important verses in the entire Bible. When you possess the spiritual meaning of this text, you have the secret of dominion, the secret of overcoming every kind of difficulty. It is literally the key to life. And I was like, that sounds a lot like some AA stuff to me. Now, we know from our history that this is the book that Dr. Bob and Bill used in the first couple of years to gain a lot of our principles and a lot of our stuff, right? So when he talked about the word meek, the word meekness also is used in a special and technical sense. Its true significance has nothing in common with the meaning it now bears in modern English. Actually, there are a few more unpleasant qualities in human nature than the one nowadays denoted by the word meekness. Hence, what I thought. John Williams once said, what if you thought what is really isn't? At a big book seminar. And I remember going, what? What if you thought what is isn't? A couple of years sober, I had no clue. I left, but I never forgot it. And this is one of those things. What if you thought what is just isn't? And it isn't. To a modern reader, the meek suggests devoid of courage and self-respect, for no use to himself or anyone else, crawling over the face of the earth like a worm. Now, I didn't think of my dad like that, but I did think he was weak because he relied on God and faith, and I thought that was quitting. I thought he was a quitter. That's not what meek means at all. It is a combination of open-mindedness, faith in God, and the realization that the will of God for us is always something joyous and interesting and vital, and much better than anything we could think of for ourselves. This state of mind also includes a perfect willingness to allow this will of God to come about in whatever way divine wisdom considers to be best, rather than in some particular way that we have chosen for ourselves. So, humility. Humility, even in the Bible, Stephen, right? The key to life. Every step. Key to life. Bible. Every step loaded with humility, or else we have no real recovery in our text. I think it's important. But we always kind of downplay it at meetings and say, oh, if I had 2 hours, I could talk on humility. It's got nothing to do with humility. Matter of fact, it's the opposite of humility. I always thought humility meant, you know, humility is for me seeking and doing God's will. When I got on my knees and started really getting on my knees, and 8 years ago when I got sober again, I begged God. I begged him on my hands and knees every morning. Please, God, show me the way. Show me the way. Because I couldn't find it. And he delivered. And that's probably the most humble I think I'll ever be. Because unfortunately, I don't beg God today. I have nothing to really beg for. My friend Joe Russo, whose wife just passed away years ago, said, guys like you and I should wake up every morning and kiss the ground. Yeah. And I looked at him and said, we sure should, but I don't. Because I have humility for today. Not every day, some days. Hopefully more days than less days, but it depends on the week. It depends on what I'm going through. Thank God I have fellowship. Thank God we have other assets and not just liabilities. Closing. Bill says, perfect humility would be a state of complete freedom from myself, freedom from all the claims that my defects of character now lay so heavily upon me. Perfect humility would be a full willingness in all times and places to find and do the will of God. Exactly what Emmett Fox said. A matter of fact, Bill probably was reading this while writing this. It is so in tune, it's uncanny to me. While I meditate upon such a vision, I need not be dismayed because I shall never attain it. Nor will I swell with presumption that one of these days its virtues shall all be mine. I only need to dwell on the vision itself, letting it grow and even fill my heart. This done, I can compare it with my last taken personal inventory. And this is where step 10 comes in for me. The biggest change, you know, when I came back after my relapse, guys like, what are you going to do different? And I remember I freaking hated it when people said that because I didn't know what to do, honestly. I had been through the steps. I had sponsored a boatload of guys. I had, you know, we got West Side started, did so many things. And they were like, what are you going to do different? I'm like, what do you mean? That's not what I said. What I did is I just walked away and said, I don't know what to do. Joel Pashkin said to me one time, why don't you try 90 and 90 when I got back after four relapses, four white chips in a 5.5 year period and about 2 years of sobriety on and off in between that period of time. And Joel Pashkin said, why don't you do 90 and 90? And I went, Like, been there, done that. Our friend Spike said to me, why don't you get a brand new big book? And I went, have you seen my big book? I got 25 years of notes in that thing. I got 6 big book seminars in that. It's signed by Joe and Charlie. Get a new big book. Suggestions were just out of, you know, they just weren't working. I'm sure I was given other ones. And guys were very gentle about it. They weren't, you know, you need to do this, or you need to do that, or you need to do this. Why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? I see that my journey toward God has scarce begun. As I thus get down to my right size and stature, my self-concern and importance becomes amusing. Then faith grows that I do have a place on this highway, that I can advance upon it with depending peace and confidence. Once more, I know that God is good, and I need fear no evil. This is a great gift. This knowledge that I do have is my destiny. And I got to tell you what, this article is a game changer for me. And like I said, we read it. Listen, we got so much literature here. We go through so much stuff. We go to tons of meetings. We hear tons of speakers. And we were talking earlier, like a lot of this stuff. You know, I'll go home on Monday and I'll remember 2 things, right? But they're usually important. And you never know when Ed O'Rourke and I were talking earlier. You never know when that delivery is going to happen and who it's going to come from and where it's going to come from. And I printed this out like 2 weeks ago, and every single morning I read it. And every single morning I went, oh my God. It was like reading the big book again. Like things should show up in there we don't even realize. And I started reading this going, humility's a whole, it changed my whole outlook on humility. It's got nothing to do it's all about God. It's all about what's my relationship with God like today. It's am I giving my will and my life over to the care of God today? And when I do that, I actually have a day of some humility. And when I don't do that, I usually have a day of self-propulsion. And that's pretty much the simple way of wrapping this up. So thanks for letting me share.